It is a sports Sunday here on The Fan on Mother's Day 2026. A beautiful, cool May morning as we open up for business today, at least until 11:45. Yours truly, Steve Zabin, with you this morning. Wesley Clark behind the board. As we have a lot to talk about, it is a big day in D.C. sports history. We hope, as today at 3 o'clock, the NBA lottery will be conducted in Chicago, Illinois. You can watch it on ABC or the ESPN app. John Wall is going to be on the dais, on the stage, hoping to recreate a little bit of 2010 magic to secure the 1-1 pick in this summer's NBA Choose 'Em Up. Now, the good news is there's at least three really good players who in most years might be the consensus number one. The bad news is nobody's really sure which one of those three is indeed the best pick of the litter. And I think there is a very significant chance that one of those three will end up being a rubber chicken. Let's hope the ping pong balls are in our favor today. Let's hope they pick wisely if they do indeed win the lottery today. 14% chance, just so you know. 14% chance. I like our chances. Don't love them, but I like them. It's the best percentage you could have for the lottery. Now, last year they had a 14% chance, best odds they could have, and they not only didn't win, they fell four slots. In fact, as I'm looking here at basketball.realgm.com, they've got a handy-dandy chart that shows in red and green the times in which the Wizards either moved up or moved down in the lottery. Red is down, bad. Green is up, good. The red outweighs the green by a factor of 6 to 2. So in other words, of the last, let's say, this would be 11 lotteries, the Wizards have only moved up twice. They've moved down six times, and they've stayed flat five times. Wait, does that add up to 11? I'm doing this on the fly, so don't quote me on this, but still, it's not been good. The lottery has not been good as of late to the Washington Wizards. So that's a big inflection point today, 3 o'clock. Thursday is a big inflection point when it comes to the NFL because the NFL schedule will be released. Now, I know what you're saying. Don't we already know the opponents for this coming season? The answer is yes. Don't we already know if we're going to play them on at home or on the road? Yes, we do. However, we don't know the where and the how and the why and the when and what time and prime time versus non-prime time. And the sequencing obviously makes a huge difference. So I think that schedule release day in the NFL, and there's going to be a ton of leaks and rumors and tweets, some of which may be accurate, others not so much. But I think the release of the NFL schedule is essentially the first day of the new NFL year. Now, the NFL has worked hard to make the league just pretty much overlap and go in a big circle. They want to own every single month with some little something of the month, whether it's April in the draft, May in the schedule, June in mini camps, July with the opening of training camps, August with preseason, then the regular season, September, October, November, December, January, Super Bowl in February, plus combine. March is free agency. Well, we're back to April again, aren't we? They have a little piece of every month. So even though the NFL cycle is almost a continuous loop, I believe that the schedule release is essentially the first day, and here's why. So many people, me included, like to plan at least one trip around an NFL game involving a team we care about and do something along the way. And so to see exactly where this opponent falls, especially if it's a warm weather opponent, if you're going to Miami, if you're going to Arizona, you kind of want to know when. And if those road games fall in September, you're probably going to skip them because nobody needs another 100-degree day in Miami or Arizona in September. If those games are in late November, now we're talking. And NFL tourism, as I like to call it, has been gaining and gaining and gaining. It's increasing all the time. Certain cities, certain stadiums invite more of it than others. I would say that Jerry World in Dallas, Vegas, LA, the three biggest, oh my God, we got to go there type road games. So therefore, the home crowds often get clipped into pretty good by visiting fans when it comes to those road dates in the NFL. But I always love to see the schedule. I always love the passion for the schedule. Kevin Sheehan of Team 980, our own Kevin Sheehan, is so into making mock schedules. He loves to try to suss it out, to try to guess, okay, here's what I think is going to happen. Here's how they're going to do it. Here's how they're going to lay it out. Here's when they're going to be on Monday night. Here's when they're going to be on Sunday night. Da, 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 da. He's got his mock schedule out. I just saw it. I'll read it to you later on in the show. But to me, the unofficial start of the new NFL cycle is coming up on Thursday. So we got the NBA lottery today, schedule on Thursday, two NBA games today. That'd be the Knicks trying to sweep the Sixers. They're up 3-0 in game four in Philly, where, speaking of fan invasions, Knicks fans were dominant down in Philly the other night. Knicks are -1.5 today to try to pull off the sweep. And then the Spurs and the Timberwolves get after it tonight on NBC, with the Spurs having won the last two games after the T-Wolves stunned them in game one. San Antonio -4.5 in that one. Last night out in L.A., might have watched the game. Lakers fall to the Oklahoma City Thunder, and they just get swamped in the third and fourth quarters. Lakers led by 2 at halftime, and it's almost like OKC was saying, okay, that's cute. We're just kind of playing around. Watch this. Second half, dominant basketball, and I need to point out, ethical basketball. Just a day ago, or 2 days ago, after game number two, J.J. Redick got fined by pretty much blasting OKC and blasting the referees, which is something many people do, saying, look, they foul all the time, and they get away with it. We'd love to foul all the time. We get called for it. There is an OKC problem in the NBA, but it needs to also be noted, and it needs to be said loudly and clearly. This is a deep, young, really good team in OKC. They also get way too many whistles. SGA gets way too preferential of a call by the referees. The two things are not exclusive. The two are mutually exclusive. The two things don't cancel each other out. Those two things exist side by side on a shelf that you have to reconcile with. They're really, really good, and they're deep, and they're young, and they're only going to get better and deeper because they have way too many draft picks again this year. And they also get too many calls. It's also turning off a lot of NBA fans. The Thunder are now 7-0 out of the gates. That is approaching what would be the best undefeated start to a playoff run in league history. The number is 11, so they got four more to go. But your final last night from Los Angeles, Thunder 131, Lakers 108. And it needs to also be pointed out, they only shot 10 free throws as a team. Did OKC. That's remarkable. They had seven guys in double figures, including the likes of Isaiah Joe. I defy you to find a casual NBA fan, a part-time NBA fan, hold up a picture of Isaiah Joe and say, who's this and what? Who is this and what team does he play for? You would stump 99.9% of the population. And I'll be honest, till I took a good hard look at his smiling face today, prepping for the show, I'm like, I probably would have not been able to identify Isaiah Joe either. But that's the kind of guys, that's the kind of system they have at OKC. They are rolling towards what looks like another NBA championship. The only thing I think that could stand in their way is Wemby and the Spurs. They've got to put down the pesky T-Wolves before that gets a chance to happen in the conference finals. The Pistons almost had a chance to put the Cavaliers down 3-0 and put them in a headlock, but the Cavaliers wriggled off the hook. 116-109, your final yesterday. Spida Mitchell, 35-10, but it was James Harden, the beard, down the stretch with three big shots. And then Max Strus with one of the most incredible single-handed plays I've seen in a long time, stealing an inbound pass, just hopping up at the right moment, two-hand Venus flytrap catching it, and then streaking down court for a key layup late in the game. The Cavaliers are alive, but I don't think they're the better team in this series. Pistons up 2-1. So there's your NBA landscape right there. Carolina in the NHL swept the very young Philadelphia Flyers. The Flyers are in the playoffs a little bit ahead of schedule, and the Carolina Hurricanes, which everyone identified as this is the team to beat coming out of the East, they have just boat raced them in a 4-game sweep. They win in overtime 3-2 last night. Flyers fans giving their lads a standing O and a stick tap on their way out the door and their way to the golf course last night. The Avalanche got destroyed by the Wild. The Wild were facing a 3-0 deficit if they couldn't win this game, and they just poured it on at home. 5-1, your final there, as the Avalanche now have some goalie questions that they need to get resolved. Today in the NHL, we got two games, both at night. Sabres Canadiens with Montreal and Buffalo tied at one game apiece. And then the Golden Knights and the Mighty Ducks, 2-1 Vegas. That game four is from Anaheim. Okay. Bobby Cox has died at 84. We need to talk about 2,504 wins, 15 division titles, 5 pennants, 1 World Series championship, Hall of Famer, and the most ejections of any manager in baseball history. By a mile. 162 ejections for Bobby Cox. Somebody did a cut-up of not all of his ejections. This would have been 3 hours long, but just a select number of his best, most unhinged outbursts at the men in blue. And it was a 20-minute sizzle reel. How funny is that? Bobby Cox was also a pretty strict manager. He insisted players wear their full uniforms for batting practice. He insisted their hats be worn forward with the bill straight. He insisted that there would be no music in the clubhouse. He was old school in that way. But he would get completely unhinged when he thought the umpires were squeezing them. I just wonder how Bobby Cox would have been in today's ABS challenge era. Would he have kept his blood pressure a lot lower, knowing he could reverse some of the more egregious calls? Or would the fact that there's so many calls being obviously wrong that you can see in graphic detail on the Jumbotron using your challenges, would that have enraged Bobby Cox even more? Part of me thinks he would have had more ejections even after winning challenges, because he would see the pitch was right down the middle and he would come storming out of the dugout to go, how can you miss that? But his players loved him. to a man, as you read his obit yesterday, you could tell the players who played for Bobby Cox and the Atlanta Braves absolutely loved him. He was fired by Ted Turner at one point in his career. And even though Turner was pretty insistent that they needed to make a change, the funniest answer to a reporter that's probably ever been said by an owner came from Ted Turner when he was asked, "So what kind of manager are you looking for in your next hire?" And he said, "Well, you know, we want a guy who's really intense, can connect with the players, spark plug kind of guy to get us going. Well, heck, we need a guy like Bobby Cox, but, well, I just fired him. But we need that kind of a guy." We need a guy just like him. Why'd you fire him, though? I don't know. I figured that we had to do that. Ted Turner passes away early in the week. Bobby Cox, just a few days later. Yeah, the jokes, the memes are flying. They should have a joint funeral, joint memorial, to start at 7.05 p.m. The TBS broadcasts of the Braves were famous for starting at 7.05 in the East, which was a new wrinkle, a new staple when it comes to television. But yeah, rest in peace, both men. Coming up, some have called Turner the last bold billionaire. And I'll talk to a guy who worked for him briefly at TBS, Tim Brando. Plus, he's got some thoughts on the inevitability of the 24-team college football playoff. My name is Steve Zabin. You can reach me on Twitter at Zabe Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo for live react and additions to this program this morning. Happy Mother's Day to all the moms and grandmas out there. And if you're going to spend some time with yours, do indeed cherish it. We are up and running on a glorious Sunday morning in May. Welcome back, Sports Sunday, here on The Fan. Steve Zabin with you. Coming up next hour, my solution to the NBA flopping problem and why it is the biggest problem I think the league is facing. Also, the LIV is dying. Final round today out at Trump National DC in Sterling. And what's next? We'll talk to the Capital Golf Gang boys about what could be an interesting, maybe nightmare scenario for John Rahm next year. But time now for Tim Brando. It's never dull getting to spend some time with Fox Sports play-by-play man and former boss of the college football desk on CBS, Uncle Timmy. We got three things to plow through. Do you want to start? Where do you want to start on those three?
Well, I think we got to start with Ted Turner, don't we? I mean,
let's do it.
We're talking about not just sports, but international icon of the consumption of news on that front, which I think blankets the world, really. But for those of us that had the opportunity, even though it might have been fleeting, to have worked for him, and my period there was, some people have referred to it as the hiccup portion of my career. I was between ESPN and CBS. It was 94 to 96.
Okay.
During that time, I was doing the early window SEC games that were syndicated on Jefferson Pilot and Raycom, and I was also doing ACC games in your neck of the woods up in D.C., with Raycom and Jefferson Pilot. So you saw me a lot in college ball on the East Coast and regionally doing that. But nationally, I had never done the NBA until I started doing the Hawks. I did about 60 of their 82 games for 3 years. And the Braves thing only happened because Ernie Johnson Jr., who's my age, was going to be working with his dad on the games that were not on TBS by contract with baseball. ESPN had a contract to do Wednesday night games, but those games were blacked out in the regions where the home team would be playing, and Atlanta was on all the time. And so we would be doing those games on what was called Sports South, which was the regional cable that Ted also owned. He later sold it to Fox, and it became Fox South, Fox Sports South, all that. But and so I got to work with Ernie's team, for Christ's sakes. I mean,
wow.
what a break that was to do 45 games a year with him during a period in which, you know, we had the strike in 94, Black Sunday, August 11th of 94. Then in 95, they win the World Series. You know, I'm in there with the legends, following the team only 45 of the games, but they treated me like I was one of the crowd because the big guy, Ernie Sr., told him to, you know, Skip, Pete, Don, and Joe had to put up with Timmy B. That was just the way it was. And that was a thrill to get to do that. And to show you what a great organization they were, they gave me a World Series ring too, which I cherish. I grew up a Braves fan. We were in Shreveport, the AA Farm Club in the Texas League was the Braves. So I grew up a Braves fan. So that was a thrill for me. But to meet Ted and to get to know him was something very, very special because and maybe because of the generation my dad was from, my dad would have been 100. I remember him talking about my dad. My dad would have been 100 on April 23rd. I remember him talking about Turner when I was in my teens. I was 14, just starting high school football play-by-play. He had just purchased a UHF channel in Atlanta, Channel 17, WTCG, which, of course, he later turned into WTBS, which became a superstation. And he found out through satellites about the same time that ESPN was being born in Connecticut in 79 that he could go national. And what he did with the purchase of first the Braves in 76, the Hawks in 77, he had purchased the television station in 70. So he had the ability to first get the rights for those broadcasts of those two teams and then to then own those teams.
Yeah.
And then the creation of CNN, which came in 1980. I mean, my God, what an incredible pioneer. Not just a regional champion, a national champion, but an international influencer, was incredible. And when you met him, Steve, when you met him, he was without question the most regular, down to earth, Decatur, Georgia guy you'd ever meet. I remember he said, "You're the ESPN guy we brought in. You're that Brando guy. Hey, nice to meet you. You know, how are you?"
Ted Turner spent 40 years making sure a kid in Missoula, Montana could see the Braves. Major League Baseball spent 40 years making sure a kid in Atlanta could not see the Braves.
Says it all, doesn't it?
It sure does. Let's pivot. 24 team playoff. I'm putting the quarter in the Tim Brando jukebox. Kerplunk, and now go.
Fans and many media think they know, and they don't. They don't understand, and they never will, the business end of what we're dealing with in college football right now. First and foremost, they're hemorrhaging money, even though they're making more money than they've ever made, okay? And fans, they cannot comprehend that. All they see and hear is about the NIL and portal and the millions and the $50 million rosters and all this other stuff. That's all they see and hear. So that they cannot comprehend that the schools themselves, thanks to the whirlwind work for years of the National Collegiate Athletic Association and a house settlement that was made, are on the hook each year for $20.5 million in revenue share, all because they wouldn't allow for payers to be played, to be paid. And for what? For what? Because they were hard-headed. But that's the hook that they're on. Now, who do you think is responsible for the $20.5 million rev share that all these major conferences have agreed to? Okay, how are you going to make the money? I'm sorry, you're not going to make it with gate receipts. It's not going to happen.
Right.
The only way you make it is through television and your television partners. It's simple as that, all right? So you're in this situation where you've got one network entity that has control. And by the way, there was never a bidding process for it. ESPN got it just on a wink and a nod. And they paid an exorbitant amount of money for it. And so much so that it's not going to make them a profit, at least on that particular deal. No way. And to prove that they're not going to make a profit on it, they subleased two of their playoff games to Turner.
Yes.
Two of their playoff games to Turner. And why do you suppose they did that? First, to make some money back off their losses. And second, so Turner could get the bad rating, and not them when they're going up against NFL playoff games. All right. How stupid and absurd is it? Is that? I mean, it's just not good business. It's just not good business, no matter what business you're in. All right. So you look ahead and you're saying, okay, how are we going to be able to sustain this moving forward and keep college football and college athletics around it in great shape? Well, the only way you're going to do it is through revenue streams. Well, how do you create new revenue streams? First and foremost, you have to do it with inventory, okay? And when you get as much parity as we have now, particularly through the portal and NIL era, look at those teams that were involved last year in the conversation and how many more teams you could have put in. I'd say arguably 16 would have been fine last year. 16 would have been remarkable. And if somebody says, well, what about that JMU and Tulane thing? That was not the fault of the CFP. That was the fault of the ACC for having a god-awful tie-breaking system that they put in place that allowed for Duke to play in the game and not Miami. All right?
Okay.
That was a total anomaly. Would have never happened otherwise. Okay? Again, the way college football is not led and not... Everyone should have the same tiebreaker among these conferences, and yet they don't.
Right.
But that's another story for another day. Bottom line, through creating a 2014 playoff, okay, you can, with the infrastructure being what it is, you can use the elimination of some of these teams from their conferences in head-to-head games, whereby you're looking at less of a factor for the committee. That elimination earned bids through the conferences themselves will give you the opportunity. And that's something I think that would be even greater for the game. And when somebody says to me, I don't want to see an 8-4 Iowa, well, guess what? You have seen a 9-3 team. Did that kill you? You have seen. I mean, really?
Nothing's going to kill us, Uncle Timmy, but
no,
it's just going to, it's going
us.
To, it's, but it's going to numb it's, us. It's going to numb us to the passion of what it normally involves.
Well, that's true, Steve, to some extent. Yes. And I get the part of, oh, it seems so massive when we hear it, but when you see it take place, we won't go to 24 right away. It's going to be 16 initially.
Like
in fact, I think it'll be 16. I think it'll be 16 for the first 2 years and maybe about 29, 30.
Okay, but
we get to 24.
For those that don't want this, you saying it's not going to get there right away is like saying, don't worry, my mother-in-law is not going to move in to live with us for another couple months.
Well,
eventually she's living with us.
Yeah, but here's the other argument that doesn't make sense, Zades. Oh, we got to protect the regular season. Well, didn't we say that when we went from 4 to 12? How did 12 go? Short of the two teams last year, I think the 12 went really, really well.
I hear
more viewership,
I know.
More money, more viewership, and the game is flourishing, and it's going to continue to flourish this way. And this notion that college football's regular season is the greatest in sport is total mythology. There are so many blowouts that people just don't want. They just throw under the table, and that's baloney. Let's make sure these games, we're already going to see the SEC at long last go to 9 games. And when they say, well, you know, we've got contracts, that SEC title game is worth 80 to 100 million. That 80 to 100 million will be dwarfed by a 2014 playoff.
John Sterling, what a career. What a ride to be the voice of the most powerful team in baseball during some of their most glorious years. Your thoughts on what it takes to be that lucky to land in that spot. And he was good, no doubt. He was good. He just wasn't for everybody. That's all.
Sure. And I got that drift from you when I caught your clip earlier in the week, which I reached out and that spawned this request from you that we talked. And honestly, I didn't know John nearly as well as I knew all the other guys at the Braves because he had left by that time. In fact, he was doing the Hawks in the 80s and replaced Skip Carey calling the Hawks on WTBS when I first came in contact with him. And I was just starting out at ESPN during that period when Dominique Wilkins really had it going in the early to mid 80s. And then by the time he left and went to New York, that created the spot that Don Sutton and Joe Simpson came in for TBS with. Mm-hmm. But I got to know a lot of the people that knew John well. And then I later did meet John. And he is your, and a lot of the guys that fall into this category from that generation, guys that would be, oh, say Al Michaels' age and older. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons why Al is still doing it, okay? I don't think Al sees himself living without doing football. I don't think he sees that. Right. And I think John Sterling felt the same way about his life. He kind of went kicking and screaming. He didn't believe the Yankee at all.
He ever. Never missed a and game. He traveled out of town after having triplets at age 62.
Correct. And that means that means it truly was his life. And I've never been built like that.
I was going to say, is that a little bit sad, do you think? A little bit?
In some respects, yes. But I'll never forget an old producer that I worked for at ESPN years ago told me, Tim, there's two kinds of people in this business. The kind that work all their lives and have very unsuccessful personal lives. And then there's those that probably don't get where they want to go, but had great stable lives. And and so there's something to be said for that, but it was even tougher for that generation, the generation that John and Al are in. It's even, I think, it became less so when television and radio and everything began to change, which through cable enabled me to sort of skip the minor league farm system and go right from, Baton Rouge television to ESPN. Okay, I skipped that. And people my age that are still doing it, like Brad Metzler, got to skip that.
Yeah,
we were a little more fortunate that way. But yeah, he was driven by insecurity in many, many ways, and a lot of broadcasters are. My God, I've got that to a degree.
No, it's never give up the chair. Never give up the chair.
Yeah, it's the but to the nth degree is where he had it. And does anybody call a game more differently than, say, Gus Johnson, Tim Brando, Joe Davis, Adam Amin, Connor Onion? None of us are alive.
Listen,
none of us.
Every announcer is like a cup of coffee. How do you like yours? Two scoops of sugar? Do you want a cappuccino? Do you want all these other things to it?
Right.
Because the difference between Gus Johnson and Brad Nessler could not be further apart on the spectrum of how they do the game. And I like them. I like them both, but not everybody does. And that's just the way it is. It's the way it's always going to be if you're a sports fan.
Yeah.
That was Tim Brando, Fox Sports Television, play-by-play. For the full conversation, you can check it out on my podcast, The Zabecast, on Friday. Coming up, a face so beautiful, it'll sell flat screen TVs, even if you don't need one. Sports Sunday here on The Fan. Sports Sunday here on The Fan, Zabe with you. Young Wesley behind the board, 800-636-1067 is the number. Going until 11:45 today, Nats and Marlins first pitch 12:15 from South Florida. Nats had their win streak snap yesterday in a close loss. We'll see if they can get back going today. Cavalli versus Alcantara today on the mound. So, her face is so beautiful, it'll sell a ton of flat-screen TVs, whether you even need one or not. They once said Helen of Troy was beautiful enough that she launched 1,000 ships. Dua Lipa is lovely. I mean, lovely. Talented, too, by the way. And shockingly grounded for a beautiful pop mega superstar. But Dua Lipa and her lawyers have said, hold on a second. The singer has filed a $15 million lawsuit against Samsung because they put her face on the box for the Samsung Crystal UHD 50-inch flat-screen televisions. Her attorneys allege the company used her image and likeness without authorization nor compensation. citing a complaint filed Friday in the U.S. District Court for the Central District of California. Variety reported that Samsung used her likeness on cardboard TV packaging beginning last year as part of a mass marketing campaign. Now, look, it doesn't say this is Dua Lipa. It is just her lovely face from the chin up, including her luscious full lips and her sultry brown eyes. But that's enough for people to get the picture. The lawsuit claims the image was used without Lipa's knowledge or consent, creating the false impression that she endorsed Samsung products. Well, yeah, we all know Dua Lipa's a Sony girl. Samsung. Said the complaint, Ms. Lipa's face, by the way, that is her real name. Ms. Dua Lipa is her actual name, which I find wild. Ms. Lipa's face was prominently used for mass marketing campaign for a consumer product without her knowledge, without consideration, and as to which she had no say, control, or input whatsoever. According to the filing, the image was taken backstage at the 2024 Austin City Limits Festival, and that image is owned by Ms. Lipa herself. The suit alleges Samsung refused requests to stop using the image and profited from the appearance of celebrity endorsements despite no partnership existing between the company and the artist. Now, I get it. If you're Samsung, you're like, hey, buy this TV. You could watch things on it like Dua Lipa would be a good thing to watch on your new 50-inch crystal UHD Samsung television flat screen. But I think for this kind of thing, and I'm no lawyer and I'm not the judge in this case, and I don't understand trademark law fully, but my general sense is, yeah, you got to show something more generic, like some tropical fish or perhaps some flowers or like nice rolling hills or a park or a golf course or a fine automobile to say, hey, look how clear and beautiful the definition is on this TV. You can't just put arguably one of the most beautiful women's faces on in the world on your TV box and then be like, yeah, no, we don't have to pay her. Do we have to pay her? Nah, just put it on there. Hey, boss, sales are up 38% this month. What do? It's the same TV. Huh. We put Dua Lipa on it. People walk by that set and they stop. They go, wait a minute. I think I need one of these, but I don't. Where will I even put it? I've already got TVs. Too many of them. Ah, you know what? Put it on the big old sled here at Costco. We're taking it to checkout. Coming up, there used to be a biological speed limit on the human arm when it came to throwing a ball as fast and as hard as you could from 60 feet, 6 inches. Well, Friday night, Jacob Mizorowski blew through that speed limit like he was the Dukes of Hazzard. A remarkable night in Milwaukee. We'll talk about it next. Only the legendary Sid Finch, who wasn't real, threw the ball faster or harder than Jacob Mizorowski on Friday night. There has always been seemingly a speed limit on arms when it comes to baseball, where power pitchers and fastball specialists have topped out somewhere around the 102 mile per hour mark. And I would have discussions sometimes on air and off air with baseball people and just guys sitting around. I'd be like, what would happen if a guy big enough with long enough levers and just with the talent from God, the lightning bolt that has been given from the baseball gods, what if a guy could throw 110 consistently? Oh, that's ridiculous. That would never happen. His arm would fly apart. It's impossible. They've been tracking pitch speeds pretty accurately with radar for 50 years. Never going to happen. It probably won't, but Jacob Mizorowski, this young phenom, second-year player for the Brewers. Whew. First of all, he's 6'7". And second of all, he has been touched by the gift of the gods, of an absolute rocket of an arm. He was facing Aaron Judge and the Yankees as he shut him down in a 6-0 win on Friday night. 6'7" versus 6'7". And Mizorowski uncorked not one, not two, but 10 pitches over 103 miles per hour. It included several pitches at 103.6, which sounds like a radio station you would listen to. Hot 103.6. Hits of today and yesterday. 103.6, 103.6, 103.6, 103.5, 103.3, 103.3, 103.2, 103.2. I'm just reading off his fastest pitches. 103.1 and 103.103. It's the fastest pitch ever recorded in the StatCast era, so that goes back to 2008. Once they started using more sophisticated sensors and radars, they could kind of accurately go, okay, here's what velo is coming out of the pitcher's arm. But my goodness, Aaron Judge was duly impressed, if not thoroughly frustrated. He said, you see guys that throw 103, but you get a little bit more time. A guy like that where he's almost dropping it in the catcher's mitt, man, it makes for a tough day. Judge is 6'7 as well. Talk about a titanic matchup. 6'7 versus 6'7 and pitches coming in at 103. I can only imagine what it would be like standing there as a civilian. What would it take for you to just, like, how much would you
$0.
Thank you. The answer is correct, Wesley, $0. And if you did, you better pack your Depends. Coming up, hour two, the flopping. It's a cancer on the game we all love, and it's only spreading and getting more resistant to detection by referees. So does the NBA have a treatment plan? Well, if they don't, I do. Hour two, Sports Sunday, coming up next.